Hey, remember Beverly Hills Cop? Well, what if we did the same thing again, with fewer jokes and a much more convoluted police procedural? At least the theme song is played 18 times in Beverly Hills Cop 2, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with my friends Laser and Wolf. Pick which one you are.
Oh!
Clearly, Camille Adams is Wolf.
Always gets me with the Wolf call. I'll be Laser.
And Robin Hitchcock is Laser.
Yes, pew.
No, you don't get to be both. Only Laser Wolf gets to be both Laser and Wolf. I'm glad this is just funny. Like I said last week, I had a moment of genuine concern. Like, am I being insensitive about just a normal name that I'm making fun of from my perspective? No. Dude is named Laser Wolf. It's funny.
It's absolutely funny. And I probably should have, like, Googled and said, find out, like, at what year was Laser Wolf the number one name for baby boys in the year?
1897.
Or, like, 2142. Like, if you went to sleep for 120 years and the person who woke you up was named Laser Wolf, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
That seems about right.
One of the kids in The Kids Are All Right is named Laser. Laser.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
because they're hippies.
That. Yeah, right. You know, names like Laser and Apple. And
you know what's actually happening as a legitimate rising name is Thor, like Marvel.
Okay, I read a tweet years ago that was like, hipsters be like, here's my child Thor and my dog Kevin. And then, spoilers for You Can't Handle the Truth, I watched a movie that had a cat named Kevin in it.
Well, I mean, my dog's name is Albert. So, I mean,
right.
And, you know, sometimes we call him Bert, just for short.
And
what was the name of that? Mary Beth, what's the movie with the raunchy kids and Jacob Tremblay?
Good Boys.
Well, yeah, I guess I didn't either. I watched it with her. One of those kids was named Thor. Like, it's like there's some, like, justification that's supposed to make it better that you're calling your child basically Hulk.
Right, yeah. But
it's like naming your kid Jesus, right?
Right.
You're naming it after a figure from myth and legend.
But it's also like, you know, that's a big name to live up to, like Thor.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, you gotta, that's a certain kind of way your life is supposed to be going. And if it doesn't, it's always just like, it's like, yeah, let's go get the computer, get IT, call Thor on the phone. Like, that's not exactly.
Right. Yeah, my name's Thor. I own parking lots. No. Anyway, I have no Tony Goldwyn reason why we drew Beverly Hills Cop 2 this week. I don't, as far as I'm aware, none of these people have died. I can't think of any thematic connection.
Yeah.
Right. So, which is starting to make me afraid.
Right.
Like
we want to be the number one death in America podcast.
Tony and Charlie Daniels in the last 24 hours. I'm like, I don't know. Brigitte Nielsen next? She seems safe, but who knows?
Barely. She's barely hanging on by a thread. Well, there's that dude who showed up, who was in Michael that we had talked about. He showed up again. Maybe that's the connector? The guy who he was selling him the blank credit cards.
Is that that guy?
Yeah.
The painter from Murphy Brown?
I guess so, yeah. I always think of him as the guy with the nasty mouth from Be Cool. But
I'll borrow from the Factsy segment to ask this question. Is this our first director repeat?
I wondered the same thing and then didn't fact check it.
Is this the first time we've landed on a movie by a director we've already discussed?
Maybe.
Tony Scott, of course, director of Crimson Tide and Beverly Hills Cop 2. I can't think of another one. Super fans, correct us if we're wrong.
At some point, if you guys start talking about horror movies, I'll check.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
And this was early for Tony Scott. And yet after Top Gun, this is his third movie, but his second was Top Gun. Really? So he did not have a gradual climb to the top of Hollywood at all, did he? He just took over.
Just came right kicking doors down.
Let me tell you what happens in Beverly Hills Cop 2, because even if you've seen it, you probably forgot. It's my turn on the 60-second recap. Robin finally got me to start listening to the podcast This Has Oscar Buzz, so now I know where the 60-second recap comes from.
Sweet. Had Oscar Buzz.
This had Oscar Buzz.
The past tense is extremely important there.
Right. But yeah, it's a good segment, and I'm glad. If you're looking for the roots of this show, beyond You Can't Handle the Truth, they're This Had Oscar Buzz and Beyond Yacht Rock, which is what I borrowed some of the structure from. This has nothing to do with nothing. Somebody tell me when to start recapping the movie.
Go.
Axel Foley's Beverly Hills pals from the first movie have a new chief, and he yells at them all the time for no clear reason as they try to solve the alphabet crimes, a series of robberies featuring a dumb clue left at each crime scene. After Brigitte Nielsen shoots Captain Bogomil, Axel flies out from Detroit to help Taggart and Rosewood crack the case. Brigitte is working for a central casting bad guy named Dent, and I am now skipping the convoluted details of the crime spree because no one, least of all the filmmakers, cares at all. They're just an excuse to get Eddie Murphy to do more Eddie Murphy things. They foil the bad guys, the new chief looks dumb in front of the mayor, Axel is the hero once again, except he lent Paul Reiser a police-owned Ferrari, and Paul Reiser wrecked it by being a doof. Oh, and Axel stole a house. The end.
That was under 60 seconds. That was around 48.
That's accurate.
And, yeah. But, like, you did, to be fair, cheat a little bit.
I did leave the recap out of the recap. I mean, no, none of that matters. Like, none of it is consequential.
Over and over again watching this movie, I kept saying, too much plot.
Really?
Too much plot. Too much plot. I do not care about Brigitte Nielsen's convoluted crime schemes. Why are they leaving clues? They're not serial killers.
Right, that's what I was saying. I was like, you're going to do all this. You're just stealing stuff. Like, why are we doing all this coded messages? You're not.
No, they did. They did explain that. And that was one.
They were doing it to set up Dean Stockwell. Is that why? Yes.
Okay. That seems like a lot.
This is what I left out. The clues led back to him because really, Dent, how do you say his name? Jürgen Prochnow?
Just Prochnow, I think.
Okay.
That was great.
I literally, as the Skype notification came on, I was watching a clip to try to figure out how to say it correctly. Let's just call him Jürgen.
Jürgen and Brigitte were robbing their own companies because they had a much more valuable arms deal going down. So they were robbing companies that Jürgen owned, but leaving the notes so it would get pinned back on Dean.
Too much like, plot.
Yeah. And all the only purpose of that was so that the three of them would have to go to six different places where Eddie Murphy could come up with a clever scheme to get information or access again. Like, just streamline it. Like, you can have him, you know, do rambly ranting monologues right. anywhere for any reason. Yeah. It's fine.
Like, he could do his bits just about anywhere. But that is the one thing that I did appreciate about this movie was that I thought it was going to be a lot more of those bits. I thought Eddie Murphy was going to be a lot more annoying than more annoying than he is in this movie. I was like, oh, there's some moments where he's actually calm and like a normal person. So I can get along with this.
But the flip side of that is the first thing I wrote down is where the shit are the jokes? Like, it's a Law and Order episode with occasional Eddie Murphy and higher production values.
Yeah.
I would argue that they left some buddy cop comedy between the two white guys present.
It was very subtle. Like, the humor was pretty subtle. And I don't know if, like I said, I probably saw the first one when I was like 12. And so I don't know if there were any callbacks in this one that I missed.
There were a couple of things in there where I'm like, I think this happened in the first one and they're doing it again. Mm-hmm. But I also haven't seen Beverly Hills Cop since I probably saw it again in my 20s at some point. I think actually I watched it with Colin once. I think we watched 48 Hours and he was like, this is horrible. And I'm like, what you actually wanted to watch was Beverly Hills Cop. So we put that on.
Well, and both were big hits. Beverly Hills Cop was a giant hit. As we will now cover in the Faxy segment, Beverly Hills Cop was released May 20th, 1987. It was the 10th number one of that year. Won the weekend with $26.3 million. If you add in Memorial Day Monday, it earned $33 million. That was the top weekend gross of the year, one of the top single weekends in history up to that point. And counting the long weekend, it was the highest weekend debut for an R-rated movie at that point, taking that record from Rambo First Blood Part 2. It won over four more new releases. That is a whole lot. For there to be five new movies coming out over one weekend was a lot for 1987. Not only that, it made more than all of those other four combined. The runner-up was Ernest Goes to Camp, came in second with $6.1 million. Ishtar, The Gate, and The Chipmunk Adventure all also debuted that weekend.
I saw The Chipmunk Adventure in theaters. That's one of my earliest going to the movies memory.
Yeah, you're probably like, what, five?
I think my earliest is Ghostbusters 2. It's either that or one of the, they re-released Peter Pan around that time, either the Peter Pan re-release or Ghostbusters 2. And I know I was young enough that I didn't understand that it wasn't a play. Like, I thought I was watching people in front of me with a weird screen in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but mine is The Wiz.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you win. Yes, correct. Beverly Hills Cop 2 easily won its second weekend. There were no new releases with $17.1 million. Won its third weekend, where it narrowly beat the debuting Untouchables, and not so narrowly beat the debuting Harry and the Hendersons, earned $12.4 million in its third weekend. It finally fell to third place in its fourth weekend behind two debuts, Predator and The Witches of Eastwick. It stayed in the top 10 for 9 weeks, on the chart for a month longer than that, earned a total of $153.6 million. That is third overall for 1987, behind only Three Men and a Baby and Fatal Attraction, well ahead of Good Morning Vietnam in fourth and Moonstruck in fifth. So certainly a very big hit, nowhere near the original, which earned $234.7 million in 1984. That edges out Ghostbusters as the number one movie of that year, adjusting for inflation.
Oh, wow.
That it's still a top 50 movie of all time, adjusting for inflation. That's $629 million in 2020 money. So really one of the biggest comedies ever. The much belated follow-up Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out all the way in 1994.
Wow.
Opening to $12.4 million, debuting in third place. It's not Anomia. Debuted in third for the Memorial Day weekend 10 years after the original, debuting behind The Flintstones and Maverick. Finished with $42.6 million, only the 34th top grossing film of that year. The reviews on Beverly Hills Cop 2 were definitely mixed. There were a few people who liked it a lot, but plenty of bad ones. I'm quoting Roger Ebert for the second week in a row, because Roger Ebert said, "What is comedy? That's a pretty basic question, I know, but Beverly Hills Cop 2 never thought to ask it."
Ooh, sick burn.
Yeah.
The best.
And in fact, Eddie Murphy himself said, "This is the most successful mediocre picture in history." It was, however, an Oscar nominee. It was nominated for Best Original Song for Bob Seger's Shakedown.
I could not hum one bar of any song in this that is not Axel F.
It goes, Shakedown. And it was not this week, not the one I'll quiz you on, but by August, it was the number one song in America. Nominated for Best Original Song. Of course, it lost to I've Had the Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing. After our obligatory The Razzies Are Terrible caveat, this is a Razzie winner. It won Worst Original Song at the Razzies for George Michael's I Want Your Sex.
Wait, what?
Did he write that song for this movie?
Right.
Yes.
What?
The song I Want Your Sex is from the Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack.
So he but was, it was, but he wrote like, it hey, for this we're movie. We're going to do our obligatory strip club scene.
Right.
Right.
Give us a beat. And he was like, I got you.
Yeah. And
kind of on the nose, I mean, but okay.
I know the Razzies are terrible, but that song isn't bad.
That's
no! That's kind of a jam.
I mean, I was like, I was kind of thrilled when it showed up. I was like, oh yeah, I totally forgot all about this song, and I'm going to go add it to a Spotify playlist right now.
Right. The original film, the first Beverly Hills Cop, was shockingly nominated for Best Original Screenplay. Didn't know that, but lost to Places in the Heart.
There's a lot of really cool Best Original original screenplay nominations from the 80s and 90s, like Crocodile Dundee, also nominated for screenplay.
Get out. Oh, and our new MPAA, Were You Full of Shit This Time segment? Beverly Hills Cop was...
No.
No.
I forget what
rated
they, what
R for violence, language, and brief nudity. Yeah, it gets to R. It's a softer R. Like, if you took out the strip club scene, it's borderline, but it's an R-rated movie.
Yeah, this is something you could edit for TBS with your one eye closed.
Right.
But you just got to watch out for the tits.
Right. Watch out for the tits. So the MPAA is 2 for 3 on
a memoir by Robin Hitchcock.
So, yeah, I was surprised at my level of disinterest. Let me ask this. How do you both feel about the franchise? Like, I've seen the original and liked it and was excited at the chance to watch the sequel. But like, it's not a, you know, this isn't one that's like a part of me.
Yeah, I don't need to go and visit the sequel or any of them, actually. I was like, I'm good. I don't like we've done the thing. I can pretty much guess what the rest of them are like. We're fine.
I feel exactly the same way. I think that I might have watched the original again before this episode if it were free on streaming. Like, I don't know. It's Eddie Murphy's charming. He's a funny guy. And I remember it being good. And then this movie is not good.
It's good. They're both good. They're, well, no. The first one is good. The first one is good. This one is much less good. They're both in that 80s mode where, like, the humor is much more based on these individuals being really funny and being them, their funny selves. In like, the humor in this is based around Eddie Murphy acting like Eddie Murphy.
Right.
In purportedly non-wacky situations.
Right.
Like, he's in an office or a gun club, and he's doing Eddie Murphy things. Isn't that wacky? Like, it's so not in the script.
The first one is meant to be more fish out of watery, right? The first one is, look at these squares in their rich person lives and their politeness and their rule following. And here is this wisecracking black detective from Detroit who's going to shake things up and put a banana in a tailpipe, right? So this one, they just kind of assume that he completely, like, he's like, oh, I'm not going to see you on our fishing trip, huh? Now they're all in the same culture is what we're meant to presuppose. And so all of that was gone from this one. And I haven't seen the movie in years, so I don't know if the culture clash stuff holds up at all, but they just like opted out for part two.
Well, it seems like there were sprinkles of it, like when he was like breaking into the house, you know, that like little stuff, like that running gag of like, I wasn't always a cop, you know, I may have like, what did he say? Like, jingled the rules a little bit but
fractured some
laws. Fractured some
law. I do like that line.
Yeah. Speaking of the house, I was sure that there was a payoff coming with the stolen house because the house belonged to somebody called Richard James. Mm. And I was sure that Rick James was going to show up at the end of this movie.
that would have been glorious.
I was 1000%. And I was really disappointed when it was some boring white guy.
Yeah, that was upsetting. It was like, why then? What was the point? Because there was only the one scene at the pool really there.
And I started doubting myself because at the scene at the pool, the one cop comes down in like the golf outfit. And I'm like, Rick James doesn't own that.
But it would have been that much better if Rick James did show up.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There are several things that are set up and not paid off. Like, remember when we briefly go to which one's Judge Reinhold?
Taggart? Rosewood.
Rosewood. We briefly go to Rosewood's house and it's this whole thing about how he's like sings to plants and has a turtle. And like, clearly that's like the beginning of a joke that never got, I know because I wrote down, if anything bad happens to this turtle, I'm subtracting 8 points, which I didn't have to do because the turtle was never mentioned again.
But I did like, and it definitely kind of put me into a how far we've fallen situation, how Rosewood is a gun enthusiast.
Right.
And
fanatic.
He's an addict. I mean, I recently read someone say that you shouldn't say gun nut because it's ableist. And I'm normally like on board with that stuff because I don't like when people say that's crazy. That right. upsets me as a mentally ill person. So I was like, I should maybe try not to say this. They recommended gun weirdo as an alternative. And I was like, that's unfair to weirdos.
Is that better?
So listen, Judge Reinhold's character is a gun nut.
Let's just go all the way to gun fucker. You're trying to offend here. That's a conversation for another day. Right. I'm trying to not gun fucker. Like I'm trying to also like pull crazy out of my vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot.
It takes a while, and I screw up. I'm sure I've said it
Me
on
too.
Here.
Yeah, same.
I think we need more guidance on things like nuts and bananas because
I also
that feels
like
different.
Bonkers.
Bonkers.
Yeah, I don't know. Regardless, anyway. Judge Reinhold's character is a gun fucker,
right.
And his other buddy cop keeps saying, Billy, we need to talk.
Right.
And I thought that was super funny. But just the idea that one cop would be concerned about another cop's enthusiasm for guns is so foreign to the way that police are now. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that police ever weren't that way. You know, like I definitely was watching this movie sort of through a like scanning for propaganda lens. Right. But it definitely struck me as like a different time.
Yeah.
Well, you brought it up. This is part of the culture right now, you know, especially in Hollywood. Hollywood is having a moment when they are deciding, do we need to divest storyline-wise from police procedurals and such? I think that my reaction was not sharp here because this is such a light, frivolous thing, albeit with a big shootout at the end. But like, for the most part, this is
convoluted policing.
right
like this is a movie that like really digs down into like crime.
Yeah. But does this instinct to not have police on our airwaves for 18-hour marathons every day extend as far as Beverly Hills Cop 2 or meh?
I don't. First of all, I don't even know where I land on that whole thing about, you know, just like cutting back on police procedurals, because it's all right. I love me some Law and Order and like all of them, all of the branches of the franchise. And so, I mean, I think it's just instead of just pulling it completely, it's just more about like just thinking about how you're portraying the lifestyle and the things that they're doing. And, you know, I mean, mind you, Elliot Unstabler is like my favorite Law and Order character ever. And there's probably a lot of questionable things that he does. And, you know, my thing is that's why I watch it. I was watching it was because of him and waiting to see him get unhinged. But but I don't know, like as far as like Beverly Hills Cop, I didn't really see, like it was all just very, they're all skirting like outside of like the things that they're allowed to do and things that are okay. And everybody's getting yelled at by their superior. And it's, I don't know. I don't think I was paying enough attention to it like that, just because I'm just like, ugh, I wasn't really into it.
I don't think that the problems of how do we interact with police in our media are going to be solved by three people watching a low-rated action movie from the late 80s.
That is a fine point, and we will move on accordingly to... Why is he wearing a snug jacket in the Southern California summer at all times?
Was I going to forget
he was from Detroit if it wasn't plastered on his chest?
I was thinking that too. I was like, dude has got to be hot as fuck. Like, this isn't right.
And especially, not to put too fine a point on it, we don't need to do anything to notice that he's the different one.
Right. Yeah, exactly. there are exactly like three black people in this entire film.
I think Chris Rock was 13.
Right.
Wow.
Baby Chris Rock.
Oh my gosh. The precious angel baby Chris Rock.
A Chris Rocket, if you will.
Right. Like, just opens up his crib door, throws his rattle down, and says a few lines in this movie.
Yes, that was a nice little surprise. It's like, oh, buddy, how you doing?
So young and so precious.
It's nice to see that since stand-up comedy, like, climbed out of the Catskills, comics have been getting put in movies and putting younger comics they know in movies. And Gilbert Gottfried, the Gilbert Gottfried scene was great.
Yeah, that was some of the police scene that was kind of convoluted for me, that I was kind of confused, like, how did we get here? I don't...
Also, that doesn't count as hacking, right?
No, I don't think so. Because
we might have to figure out our bingo tie rules really quickly.
Right, yeah, I don't think it does, because he just used his computer to look it up. It wasn't exactly hacking.
Good.
In-person hacking.
He accessed computer information that was meant to be secure from him.
Right, well, but it was at the location. Like at the spot, yeah. Like where it was. If he had got that done at his stolen house, then
right. So it was through real world con artistry instead of technical know how, therefore not hacking.
Yeah, exactly. Like he might as well have like gone in the dude's office and looked through his file cabinet.
I think if you go to a place, unless the place you're going is the better computer to hack into the computer that you really want to get to. What's that today I learned this week? You know when they developed the image of the black hole, that little micro news story 3 years ago where they had the first like actual picture of a black hole.
Oh, yeah.
The resolution on that image was so high that they had to load hard drives full of data onto a plane and deliver them to the eventual destination manually, because they figured out that they could send it over the internet, but the transfer speed would be so slow that a plane was faster than the internet in that case.
Remember, not hacking. Remember when we had such frivolous things to worry about in the world? Like, remember when it was just that simple, about the resolution of a black hole?
Black hole
At this point, it's like, maybe there's a solution in there. Let's send Jodie Foster to find out. Like, what's the biggest gloss, you know?
No, you should send a poet.
Right, right.
It was a contact joke. Anyway.
Ah, there it is.
I got it. It was a joke where you say, right, instead of laugh. Yes. I'm sorry. So I liked a number of the scenes. Like I said, the Gilbert Gottfried scene was really great. I liked the explosive scene where he convinces her that the package is about to blow up. Like, there, when it got around to doing a bit, it was usually good. The Gerald Ford in the strip club, like, that was fun.
My God, that's probably my favorite bit in the whole movie, is the guy being like, wait, do I look like Gerald Ford? And Eddie Murphy saying, you all look like Gerald Ford. Right.
Yes, that was pretty good. And speaking of the strip club, can we talk about the aggressive stripper with her pole dance? Like, that was the most aggressive pole dancing I've ever seen in my life.
She is fighting that pole.
Right? Like,
that
ma'am.
Pole killed her daughter.
I almost, like, had my eyes off the screen. I think I was tweeting when that scene began, and then I looked up and was like, wait, did I miss nudity? And rewound, because that's what I'll do. And it was the only time that I've ever done that and been like, I would have been better off not seeing this naked person. I just feel like, I feel like she thinks I did something wrong. Is she mad that I rewound?
Yes, she is angry at the world. There weren't really a lot of scenes. Like, there was stuff in there that, and I'm not even recalling it now, like, just like random, like, oh. But it's just for the overall, I was just excited that Eddie Murphy was like kind of toned down. Like, I guess I kind of liked the whole, he's trying to get into the gun club with the vitamins. And that whole thing when he starts talking about his twins, Monique and Unique, and how you can't move it, or you can't fart near the thing, and or it'll explode. I mean, that was a nice scene. That was a cute scene. But I don't know.
Eddie Murphy is funny and charming. It makes sense that he was a huge star, you know? And for any Eddie Murphy star vehicle, it's like, this kind of makes sense.
I get it. But, as I was looking through his filmography, I'm like, there's not very many Eddie Murphy movies that I'm just like, yeah, let's pop that in. Life might be the only one. Like,
do you remember how, like, a few years ago, a not Eddie Murphy movie called Life came out
with Jake Gyllenhaal? Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, I was driving somewhere semi-rural for reasons. I think maybe I was doing a sketch show at the time, and I was driving somewhere for a prop. And I drove past one of those movie theaters that looks like it maybe has been closed since 1999. And it said life in the thing. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a theater that's been closed since 1999. And then I found out that there was a new movie called Life. That was a long story to tell for not a lot of reason.
That seems about right. I also really enjoy Eddie's stand-up. Like, Raw, that is my shit. Like, I can't wait till we pull that one because it's on the list. It got to number one.
I was going to say that, like, because I remember watching Raw when I was, like, probably too young to be watching it.
I was absolutely too young.
Part of the reason I loved it so much is that it felt so transgressive to be watching it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I'm very curious if it holds up to grown-up eyes.
I mean, there's still stuff that my mom had actually recorded the audio of the, like, we rented the video, she recorded the audio and would play the audio tape, like, after the fact. And like, to this day, there are still, like, parts of that we'll just, like, call back to, and we'll just quote at each other.
It's interesting because it's one of the best go-tos if you're trying to argue that offensive comedy works, right? Like, because there's a lot in there that, you know, by any standard is just being offensive.
Yes.
But, you know, when people are saying, like, well, comedy shouldn't, you know, attack or offend, you can say, well, what about Eddie Murphy Raw?
95% of it. Oh. 95% of it is offensive and attacking.
Yes. No, I hope we draw it. I hope we draw it right now. Tony, if you're listening. Let's rate Beverly Hills Cop 2. I don't know, 55? Like, it's a thing to look at. Like, it's not, you know, it's more mediocre than bad. 55.
Wow, that's much bigger number than I anticipated from you, seeing as, did you say you liked it? Or you don't even recall?
I didn't. Well, I didn't ever. It's way less good than I wanted it to be, so that's why I have this tone. But, like, it's not bad, it's just kind of whatever.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, 65 was what I gave it.
So I was gonna give it 50, and it was the same feeling that I had long time ago. I did the You Can't Handle the Truth episode about Justice League, and I was like, look, this movie is okay, it's a 5.
Right.
And that's how I feel, but it is better than Justice League, so I'm going to give it a 51.
Nice. Yeah, it's like it's difficult now at this point because, you know, we were, at least I was just like, so in the early movies that we watched, it's like, oh yeah, this number, that number, this number, that number. And now I'm like, okay, now I got to, like, kind of rate it according to, like, what these other, will I watch this again before I watch Stigmata? Like, that's kind of where I am now.
I feel like I can't go back and look at my old numbers too much. It just becomes too complicated, and I just need to follow my heart. And my heart said 50, and then I gave it a bonus point.
I think you have just invented the Justice League average, because I've thought about this for a while, what this movie would be. Because there's a Chuck Klosterman thing. Yes, he's annoying now. But, like, he had an essay about how And the Cradle Will Rock by Van Halen is the world's most average song. Every song better than And the Cradle Will Rock is a good song, and every song worse than And the Cradle Will Rock is a bad song. I think that's true for Justice League. Like, if you say,
you might have said that when I said this back then.
Really?
Yes. We should go back and listen.
It's still true. But yeah, no, you're exactly right. Like, if something is better than Justice League, if something isn't as good as Justice League,
that's not bad.
A good movie.
Right.
Interesting. Right. Anyway, it's 57. 57 is the score for Beverly Hills Cop 2. That seems about right. It is just below GoldenEye and While You Were Sleeping. Those movies are a little better than Beverly Hills Cop 2. I mean, yeah, we're saying these things that are affecting our scores, but every time we, like, see the overall chart and where things land, it's like, yeah, that's right.
Correct. Right. It goes right there.
Yeah. To the bingo card. Somebody's getting a bingo, right?
No, we decided it's not a computer hacker. This does not count. And it's not a sports movie, so I get no bingo.
Yeah.
Was there a coffee shop in there somewhere?
I don't think so. I wasn't looking for that, so I'm not sure.
I really don't think so.
I don't think so, though. It does take place in two different states.
That one is definite.
And then Home Invasion for not Rick James's house.
I mean,
I'll leave that one up to Camila.
It's not exactly what I meant, but no, I'm just going to go with no.
Okay.
All right. The only additional square is two different states. So we all have a lot of ways that we could get a bingo next time, but it did not happen here today. So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I have seen so many movies because I'm going away for a couple of days, so I did all of next week's movies now, plus all of last week's. Should we just talk about Hamilton? Like, that would seem to be the thing.
Sure, let's talk about Hamilton.
This is me hopping on the Hamilton bandwagon. It's
yeah, welcome. I just hopped on, I guess. So I don't know if I.
No, so did I.
I mean, you know, because I mean, both the majority of the population was not lucky enough to go see it on Broadway. When I heard that it was coming to Disney Plus, I was afraid it was going to be like a film version of Hamilton. And what I really wanted was what we got, which is great. And just like, I don't know, I'm just going to. It's just going to be me just gushing. Let me just tell you, my most favorite song, please. My most favorite moment is Satisfied.
Well, I just don't even know what to do. I like had to run laps. I was so... sorry, keep talking.
My God, that number is just the... from the, first of all, like this woman's voice, I forget her name already, fucking amazing. Like I can't even get over how just chilling her voice is, and then you know the direction that everything is taking, the rewinding of the time that's happening, the choreography, the set, like changing out of the set, and just the lyrics, and it actually made me cry. Like I was so, like by the time she got to the end of it, I'm just in tears. I'm like, my God, this is the best fucking number, like musical number I've ever seen in my life, and I don't even know if it would have done it justice for me to have seen it live, like just because of the editing that they did to it with the lightning change and all that stuff. But yeah,
I also felt like right before that scene happened, I knew nothing about this musical other than its like, you know, importance right. in pop culture. I didn't, and I know American history, but like, I certainly did not know that this subplot was about to occur.
Right.
And I said something like, wow, I love Angelica, and I feel like I wouldn't know to love her if I weren't watching this version because I wouldn't be able to see her face.
Right.
Right? Because she does such great face acting in the first few scenes. And somebody said, right, like, as I was saying that, somebody was like, just wait. You know what I mean? And then that scene happened, and I was like, this is the greatest thing I've seen in my entire life. This woman deserved, they should have renamed the Tonys, the Angelicas. Like, this is the pinnacle of human theater.
Exactly. Like, I couldn't even take it. Like, I've watched Hamilton itself 3 times. I've listened to the soundtrack crazy amount of times, and I don't know how many times, like, I've just watched her number, like, that number Satisfied. And then also, like, watching it and then going back and watching Helpless again, because they rewind everything and replay it again for her number, for Angelica's number, that it's just, it makes it that much more astounding. I'm in awe.
So were you a fan of the musical before you saw this?
No, I knew nothing of it. Like, I mean,
okay.
Just, you know, everybody's buzz and all that. And I may have listened to the soundtrack once. I was like, oh, you know, I'll listen to this because I'll probably never see this damn thing. So, you know, right. I listened through it. And so I was just like, eh, you know, it's fine. Whatever. I had nothing against it. But now I'm just like, give me all the Hamilton swag. I want to support everybody about everything. I need a t-shirt. I need books. I need this.
And to your point, you know, about how few people have seen this, the coolest thing about this happening right now is that 2020 is the year of we're not allowed to do things.
Right.
And Hamilton is in a lot of ways the hardest thing to do. Right. Like no ticket is more hard to get and expensive, you know, besides the Super Bowl and the NBA All-Star game. Like no like big cultural thing is harder to see, or was harder to see than Hamilton until 4 months ago. So for the fact that, you know, in a year where there is all this stuff in the world that we can't do, the fact that everyone in the world can sit down and watch Hamilton for $7 is really, really impressive.
Yeah.
I'm sure that is more, you know, thank you, Lin-Manuel, than it is thank you, Disney.
Right.
It's still very generous of Disney because they were going to release this in theaters and probably would have made a lot of money on it. Mm-hmm. But it's really cool that it's here. I also had not seen it. I missed an opportunity to see it on Broadway. And then, you know, when it was here, it was just too expensive and I didn't go. But I kind of, you know, I knew what it was about. I was familiar with a number of the songs. So I kind of got where we were going. My BFF, Melanie, said, get tissues ready. And I was like, I'm sure it's very emotional, but like I don't really cry at things. Like, you know, it's once every couple of years that I'm actually crying. So I don't think I'm going to then cut 2 hours, 2.5 hours later, and I'm sitting right over there, like sobbing and holding myself. Like
an audible sob. I watched it with other people in their backyard, and you know, these are some of my closest friends. I was still like kind of embarrassed at audibly sobbing in front of them. I think that I might have audibly sobbed in a theater of strangers because I was that emotional.
Strangers?
I'm a crier.
In a theater of strangers. I thought you were saying you saw the movie.
I did not watch it in a backyard with strangers.
I thought you were saying that you saw Strangers, the movie, in a theater and was crying.
To me, this is a remarkable feat of writing, first off. Because I haven't read this book, but you can tell by what happens. This guy, you know, Hamilton, he's on money. He has, he clearly has a messy biography. He doesn't have this, like, naturally flowing three-act life that it's like, this lends itself perfectly to a musical. To turn this confusing, complicated, flawed piece of history into the best musical imaginable is just an unbelievable work of writing a thing.
Like, I totally envy, like, the kids who are in school, like, learning U.S. history right about now. Because, I mean, if they had something like this when I was going through school, I would have probably passed more history courses. Like, it was because history was probably my worst subject because I hated it all. It was just, you know, boring and dry and blah. But, my God, for it to be taught like this, like, that would be astounding. Like, I would have been acing. I would have probably gone to be like a historian of sorts. I don't know.
I will say, as much as I love Satisfied and that whole thing, at one point I did say, he doesn't seem that great though. Why are they all in love with
him? I was
so they didn't
wonder.
Really answer that question.
I kind of wanted to like Google some more about Hamilton. I was like, was he really like, I mean, but I'm like,
did he have like a really big dick?
Right.
What's
I was like,
on?
I was like, but you know, Camila, you're probably not going to get very accurate information. You'll get a couple sketches of what people thought and said that Hamilton looked like. So it's really not worth it.
And just, he's on the 10. Look at the 10 and go, would I?
And then you have to ask, like, you know, well, maybe, at what age was he sketched for the 10? Like, what? I mean, maybe he was like, maybe he was that really that hot shit in his 20s. Like, yeah, dude just got back from war. What? Like, yep.
But he's depicted as this total dork who starts conversations with, you're an orphan, I'm an orphan too.
But he was a lady. I mean, they do tell not show. Like, they're like, he's a lady killer. Like, we're not going to depict that in any way. Just trust us. He's a lady killer. It's fine. He's just a charmer.
Maybe that was it. Yeah. You know, and there's also probably, you know, not a lot to choose from back then.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what was the joke? The gag was that Martha Washington named her feral tomcat after him. And they're like, that's true.
And, yeah, they did the John Oliver move of this is factual.
Right.
No, I loved it. One person on Facebook was like, if it's so great, why did you give it a 9 and not a 10? It's not actually a movie. Like, that's the thing. So this is as good as it could be while in no way being a movie.
Right.
Like, I can't even, I was so taken by just the story and everything that I haven't even gotten to the point of processing what it means for film theater, right? Which is very relevant to my actual life. And I'm not even there yet. So I'm just like, I like the story of these songs. Let's go.
Yeah, the story was very well done. And I would really like to see more theater filmed in this way.
Yes.
Guess what? There's a pandemic.
Good timing. Want that. But I think it's going to happen because Disney was looking for the other thing, right? Like, they knew that they had the Marvel people and the Star Wars people and the Disney people and the Simpsons people. And even with all of those people, they were like, oh, what else?
More?
And
how much more money can we rake in?
Right. I mean, as much as like it's Disney, they're fine. They were like growing a little bit more slowly than they anticipated because after Mandalorian, they didn't have a big new thing that was hooking people. That's the, you know, strategic part of dropping this now rather than in theaters. They knew that people would sign up to see Hamilton.
Right.
If those numbers are high enough, I would love to have a recording of Wicked or, I don't know, Dear Evan Hansen or any Disney plus appropriate musicals.
Right. What other should probably be can we jump on?
Right, right. Exactly. It's like, now I feel like I'm a part of pop culture now. Now I get it. It's like, you know what? 5 years later, it's like, I get it, guys. I get the references and the jokes. Hello.
It's like, this is three people going, did you know Hamilton is good? And everyone, yes, yes. We knew.
Have you heard about this play called Hamilton? This man named Lynn?
I don't know after that if there's any point in more You Can't Handle the Truth.
I watched the movie with a cat named Kevin.
All right. Which one was it?
Desperados?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I was like, is that what it's called? Yes, with Lucien Padron. Don't watch it. It's not good.
Also, don't watch 7500 on Amazon with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Don't bother.
What is that?
He plays a pilot and the plane gets hijacked and then he has to do stuff in order to make it not be hijacked. But it doesn't pay off. Like, it all takes place in the cockpit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, and you know, there are only so many films that pull off one location, one setting well. And this is not one of them.
I think Desperados is fine.
It's very sitcom-y. It's very idiot plot.
I mean, I'm grading on a COVID curve.
Okay.
Because like, we just need new things. Like, please give me new things to review. So if you're looking at one of my written reviews and it's like a 5 or a 6, that means during the before times, I would have not liked this movie. But Nassim Pedrad is great and like got so underused on SNL. And she's like, I love her as a leading performer. There were a couple scenes that worked. It's the epitome of put this on Netflix when you actually want to look at your phone, but kind of want to watch something.
I was playing Animal Crossing the entire time I was watching it. So like, if there are nuances that I missed because of that, that's on me. But kept saying, this is dumb out loud. But I also didn't turn it off and I did laugh out loud.
Yeah, it's fine.
But especially at the very, like, after they leave Mexico and there's somehow 20 minutes more movie where she like goes on this transformative journey to become a good guidance counselor. I think that they were trying to like make it so it wasn't like getting the man fixes her life, but also it was 20 minutes of movie that I did not want to be watching. I was like, just get the man in her life and roll credits.
But then she has to save the cat from a tree. Kevin. Wait, when I say it, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a coming. She gets locked out of a place naked. She gets in a surprisingly graphic sea life mishap.
I mean, the whole plot is that she goes to Mexico to delete an email. It's very sitcom-y.
Speaking
of things that don't count as hacking.
Yes.
Which, by the way, that guy was real basic. It would have been way easier to guess his password than it was to break into a Mexican resort.
Yeah.
No one saw this movie. Next week's Netflix release is The Old Guard with Charlize.
And?
It's pretty good.
Okay.
It definitely is one of those movies where it is setting up for a franchise that almost certainly isn't going to happen.
Right.
It feels like a first chapter. I can't imagine they're going to keep going because it's not bad enough to pay. It's not bad, but it's definitely not good enough to make me go, I need more of these characters in this world. It's based on a graphic novel series. It works. Everything in it is fine. The best part of it is the two mostly leads are Charlize and Kiki Lane from If Beale Street Could Talk. They're both great and they're great together. It's worth watching and it's a fun, diverting action movie.
And stay tuned. If you like hearing my voice, you can hear me talk about this movie on the Theronathon sometime in the next couple weeks.
That's right. Oh, and to correct from last week, Greyhound is not the movie that gave Tom Hanks COVID.
Okay, good.
He was working on something about Elvis. He's working on some Elvis movie in Australia that has not been completed yet. Greyhound is a with Vanessa Hudgens' boyfriend, Mary Beth says.
People are going to die.
Well, anyway, Greyhound, I didn't know Tom Hanks wrote Greyhound. It is a very short, like the credits roll at 81 minutes. It is about one guy leading a convoy of ships across the Atlantic with U-boats in World War II. And it is like, we thought Crimson Tide was mostly Navy jargon. There is nothing but Navy jargon in Greyhound. And if it didn't have Tom Hanks, there would be nothing. But It has Tom Hanks. So
he seems to be upset with the way Apple TV is handling them.
He is mad. Like, he is just shit talking Apple TV because this was a passion project for him, and it's very like pretty and like this is probably something that would be best in a Dolby theater, and so he is pissed that it's coming out on Apple TV.
Thomas. I don't think he could get pissed. I would like to see him like steaming mad.
He didn't get pissed about the COVID. He was very calm.
It was weird. Like, we had different symptoms. I don't know. It's fine.
let's mention tomorrow night, as you're hearing this, it's trivia time again, Camila.
More trivia. This time we are going to pull all of the movies from the 80s that we have reviewed. So it could be anything from Sharky's Machine, Invasion USA, Jagged Edge, Oh God, You Devil, Child's Play, Scrooge, Teachers, Break-In, and Back to School. But like, I guess go back and do your homework. Go watch some of these movies. And if you feel like, you know, you got the juice to go ahead and do it, we've got the Eventbrite invite for you to register on. We'll be circulating on the Facebook and the Twitter accounts, and sign up for it beforehand, and you get a chance to win another gift card.
Here's your barely useful hint for making it to the end of the episode. I wrote a couple of the questions yesterday, and one of them was a how old was this person when making this movie question. And all I'll say is, I was shocked by the answer, and we did an episode, so you'll be surprised too. It was a very good time last time, so I'm glad we're doing it again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Let's draw a movie. The number is 377, and that is another 50 Shades movie. It's 50 Shades Freed. What happened? Did we draw one of these and veto it?
Is this the third one?
What happened? I know there was a 50 Shades moment during a draw.
I know
draw.
We talked about it at some point.
I think you might be thinking about when we had Twilight.
Yeah, I think we mentioned 50 Shades on
Correct.
Something. I'm not going to veto it because I feel like this is going to be a hilarious episode.
This will be my second time talking about this movie in a podcast with Sean Collier.
On this podcast. That's the thing. Like, that's my objective. Well, I really don't want to watch it again. But beyond that, my objection is like, we've covered it. It was gotcha. It was one of the final You Can't Handle.
Oh, really?
Right. Also, here's the thing. I want to veto.
You've okay. got two still, but, right? Or no, you just have one.
I just have the one.
Gotcha.
Okay, Camila. Do you actually want to watch this movie?
I don't actually want to watch the movie. I am more interested in what's going to come from it. Like, I'm not like, yes, I get to watch it, but I'm more like, oh my God, this could be like a very hilarious podcast episode.
But this isn't even the one. This isn't even the one. I know I'm like breaking protocol and arguing for someone else to veto. This isn't even the one where that would happen, because it's the last one.
Right, right.
Which is just like a bad Lifetime movie without even that much sex.
Yeah. He licks ice cream off of her. I'm vetoing this.
All right.
Yay!
Now watch, we just get 50 Shades of Grey. The first one is the next poll.
Here's the thing. I just want it on the record. Like, go listen to the old episode, because I was somewhat defensive of this. The whole reason I went on that episode was to say that people are too hard on the 50 Shades movies because they are made for women and they're not the worst movies ever made, but they're very bad. And I do not want to spend $4 to watch this movie and talk about it for another hour. There's only so many times I could be asked to talk about 50 Shades Freed.
That is Robin's veto. There is still one in play. Camila is the only one with a veto left, but we cannot use two vetoes in a row. So we are locked in on number 817. Nope, we're not. We've already done that. That's Oh God, You Devil.
Gotcha. Yeah. I feel like this happens way too often.
Yeah, it statistically shouldn't happen. So we are locked in on number 988, which is the beginning of the career of one of the biggest stars in Hollywood today. You know him as Dwayne Johnson, but then he was The Rock, and he was starring in The Scorpion King.
That's did I make it worse? Did I
no,
make it worse?
That's way better. That's way better.
Camila, did I make it worse?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I just never wanted to see it. It's fine. It's fine. We'll see.
It's a spinoff from the Brendan Fraser Mummy franchise.
Know,
what is there not to love?
There's no Brendan Fraser in it.
There's no Brendan Fraser in it.
That's the problem.
No, it's about The Rock's character.
I know. Like that's what I'm saying. That's the problem. Like my 90s boyfriend, Brendan Fraser, is not in this film.
All right. Well, but, I may live to regret my veto, but we'll see.
Oh, no, you won't. You will not. If for no other reason than...
Are you a Scorpion King fan? Stan?
No. I just really clearly remember this movie has the worst CGI moment in a successful movie I can recall. Oh. So... that's my setup. There is a moment of computer-generated imagery that is so stunningly bad that you fear for the people that approved it. I'm excited. Beverly Hills Cop 2 was released May 20th of 1987. What was the number one song in America when Beverly Hills Cop 2 hit theaters?
Whitney Houston?
I Want to Dance with Somebody?
Nope. Nope. Nope.
I Want Your Sex.
It was not. It would not go to number one. Only Shakedown. That went to number one, but later. We're looking for a band, not a solo performer.
Bon Jovi.
Whitesnake.
No and no. I will say this. I was confused that this was number one in 1987 because the album was several years old at that point, and I think of this as like a mid-80s song.
You too?
I guess it wasn't. Correct. What song?
With or Without You?
That is correct. Huh. That album is from 85, right?
The Joshua Tree?
Yeah.
It might be one of those situations where people in Ireland were listening to it and Americans didn't figure out for a little while.
I mean, that used to happen. Like Jagged Little Pill released singles for like 3 years.
Right. You know? Right.
It was released in 87.
To be fair, that still happens. One of the biggest hits last year was Truth Hurts, which was recorded in 2017.
Huh.
And was not on the album initially. Right. That's the baffling thing about Truth Hurts. Anyway, U2, I used to love U2, and then they worked hard to knock that out of me, didn't they? Like, there was a time 20 years ago where people like me worked hard to defend U2, where like, no, these albums are still good, they put on a great live show, and people would be like, I don't know, they're full of themselves and everything sounds watered down. And we all went, no, that's not true. And then they proved that it was for 20 years.
They're like, hold my beer.
you have not yet seen watered down imitations of ourselves.
Number one movie in America.
Gonna stop the recording. I do like how every episode of this show ends with us making some kind of shady remark about pop music.
Because we're movie people.